You are listening to episode number 107 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Oh yeah. You are listening to episode number 107 of the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast. I am your host, Iggy, a.k.a. Ben, your competent host. Well, not always competent, depending on if you have taser on, depending on the time of the day. But
hey!
Joining me tonight, our fearless reporter. Well, he's not really a reporter. He's kind of just our bitch boy. Brian. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, you asshole.
Oh, well. And the man who just got back from Pride, Arnold.
Yo.
And, of course, Grendel Taser.
Hello.
If you haven't read Grendel, you should.
Hey, man. Really good. You know what? If he has fucking naked Angelina Jolie as his mother, I would be Grendel, too.
Do you even
That's a
what?
Terrible.
No,
terrible.
No. Have you seen her feet? She has man feet.
Is that right?
She has man feet. Look at that movie where she was the Russian infiltrator spy.
Taser, you have the weirdest taste in women. You don't go
she
up to
She has
Angela.
Man feet.
Oh my god!
I don't think that he's not complimenting her. He's saying it's fucking weird.
She has. I mean, she has a workable tush, from what we saw in what was that movie? The one that was based on the comic book that wasn't nothing like the comic book.
Tomb Raider.
Wanted.
Wanted. Thank you. She has not a bad tush. But she has man feet. Man feet.
Okay. Man feet aside, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, whether it's comics, movies, video games, TV shows, cartoons, maybe anime. I don't care. Well, we are in the thick. We are halfway through AVX right now. We're going to talk about issue 6 later on. But obviously, the speculation for months has been, who's going to be playing musical chairs at MarvelCon, I would believe, starting October. But it seems Bleeding Cool with their fillings references, which was obviously...
Those were so fucking nasty to look at.
Yeah, get that shit. Yeah. Who does that?
Bleeding Cool. That's who. Rich Johnson. So, anyways... There's lots of speculation, and this actually came a couple weeks ago, but I didn't want to talk about it until there was one proprietor left to be talked about, and that was the Ed Brubaker component. But, Brian, let's see who's playing musical chairs.
All right. Starting at the top of the line, we have the infamous Brian Michael Bendis, who will be taking over both Uncandy and the adjectiveless X-Men titles. Following him, we have Jonathan Hickman and Asad Riddick taking on the Avengers title, the main Avengers title. Following that, we have Rick Remender and Jerome Pena taking over a new title in the same Astonishing line as Astonishing X-Men and Astonishing Spider-Man. We'll have Astonishing Avengers from that pair. And finally, Matt Fraction and Salvador LaRocca are moving on to tackle the Fantastic Four.
Which means Hickman will be off, I believe, both FF and Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And also, Kieran Gillen will be, since he's no longer be writing Uncanny X-Men, will be taking over the Invincible Iron Man along with everybody's favorite artist, / tracer, Greg Land on the Invincible Iron Man. Yes. Porn shots in Iron Man. Well, actually, that wouldn't be bad. Anyways, let's move on. So
Tony Stark's life is a porn. What are you talking about?
It seems, and the thing, and of course, you also forgot to mention that Ed Brubaker will be leaving Captain America.
Right.
Also,
I figured out
not Winter Soldier, just Captain America. He's staying on Winter Soldier until it's canceled, which will probably be by the end of the year. He will be leaving the book, and I'm assuming it hasn't been official, but I'm assuming their new love toy, Cullen Bunn, will be taking over the Captain America title. And Ed Brubaker has been on that book for nearly 8 years. It's about time. And, of course, there you go. So with that note, I'm actually excited for somebody to not name Ed Brubaker to be writing Captain America. I mean, he while his voice has been resonant with that character or that sort of little pocket, not pocket universe, pocket world of Marvel, it's kind of been stagnant for, say, the past, I don't know, 4 fucking years since a little bit after Steve Bucky became Captain America, the before and a little bit during Captain America of Bucky Barnes being Captain America was awesome, and I love that run. It's great. Hickman being on Avengers with is it Esad Ribic, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I don't know about that because like everybody thinks it's a sure fire gig that Hickman's going to be a Goldbuster Avengers. I think it's going to be really different because while a lot of people, Gamera, I'm looking at you, have criticized Bendis, he has like what I said with Brubaker, has put a distinct voice in how the Avengers associate for years now. And I'm wondering, and of course Hickman's a completely different writer than him, writes more methodically, less banterish. He can do banter, obviously, but more methodical, more scientifical, more slice and dice kind of thing. So I'm interested to see how Hickman brings his approach. But the one that I'm really loving, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be an ongoing, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be a miniseries, is Jerome Pena and Rick Remender's Astonishing Avengers. Just because Rick Remender is arguably the most insane writer in comics, and so he gets away with a lot of shit. I'm interested in what he can get away with the book that I'm pretty sure is going to be one of those that's in continuity but not in continuity. It's going to be standalone, yada, yada, yada. That's how usually the Astonishing books work. And you know, what's interesting is that Fraction is going to be taking over Fantastic Four, and I don't even know if that's going to get me to read Fantastic Four. And I love LaRocca, too. I think he gets a bad rap for Iron Man. He draws it better than Greg Land does, and at least he makes the armors look cool.
That's not really saying much, because most people draw better than Greg Land anyway. I mean, that's not really
accomplished. Because Greg Land doesn't draw, he traces.
Ooh. Yeah.
He traces. It's a fact. He pretty much.
Still, I hold him in higher regard than Rob Liefeld.
At least Rob Liefeld tries. Greg Land doesn't
tries try. Being the operative word. You forgot the other word, too, which is failing.
Yeah,
try
you know
and
what,
failing.
Brian, you know what, Brian?
Rob Liefeld never did nothing to you. You leave Rob Liefeld alone.
Yeah, Brian,
never.
You know
I love Rob Liefeld.
You want him to the gates of hell.
You know what Rob Liefeld has to do to you? All he says, hey, go look at my bank account. And then you shut the fuck up. So, this is interesting. I think it's going to be a very interesting world post-AVX. Bendis is clearly not going to go in the spotlight. I'm wondering why they would give him both X-Men titles. You know, I can understand Uncanny, but
because
why give
you touch yourself at night?
But why? I'm going past that. I always wonder why you're giving him adjective list. It doesn't make any sense. Didn't they just make a big announcement that Brian Wood was going to be taking over the title? This is kind of weird. I hope Bleeding Cool is wrong in that aspect. Other than that, I think it's going
to
be...
Certainly were in regards to that Nebel kid. Just
well,
saying.
I don't know. I hope they're wrong in this case, because it doesn't make sense to give him 2 X-Men titles. I mean, despite it doesn't make sense to me. It just does not. Plus, there's no any indication that he's even going to leave New Avengers, but I'm pretty sure he's going to leave that as well. But what also about Avengers Assemble? Does that get canceled? Does that continue on with a new writer? Then what the fuck was the point of launching that book anyways, other than for Bendis to do New Guardians of the Galaxy ongoing? I think it's going to be very interesting come October. October, November, December, January. Those months right there is going to be real interesting to see what's going to happen post AVX. Arnold, disenfranchised man, what do you think about all those musical chairs?
It's a lot of shifting around. Let me see which ones I can remember. I'll start there because that's the one I'm I guess, least excited about, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But he had me with his S.H.I.E.L.D. story, which either I'm forgetting to pick up issues of that book, or it's been really delayed, or maybe it finished and I just didn't remember.
It's just really delayed, hasn't finished.
Okay, that's what I thought. That aside, he had me at the beginning of FF and then lost me, like, he lost some of us as well. So I'm kind of like, he's got like 1.5 in the pro and like 1/2 in the con, I guess. So going into it, I'll still pick up Avengers because, you know, I'll always get the new books that I'm already reading when they're switching over writers and artists and things like that. I'll always give the new regime a shot before I say it's bad right off the jump. I really don't see why we need another Avengers book, but since everything needs to have either an avenging or astonishing attack to it, I guess they're going to do that. I'm definitely not picking that up because I just don't need another book to add to my buy pile. Who else is there? Bendis on the X-Men books. I stopped reading Adjectiveless X-Men before the first arc was even done because it was that terrible vampire bullshit. By Gershler, I think it was. So I don't know if I'll go back to that just because it's Bendis, maybe not. Uncanny, what's happening in Uncanny now isn't all that great. Kieran Gillen, it's just been dragging along. I'm almost kind of picking it up out of necessity now. But so I'll definitely give it a shot just in the hopes that it can't be as bad as it is right now, hopefully. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. And I think back when we were speculating about who we would want on other books and stuff like that, we had mentioned Bendis on the X-Men quite a few times. So I'm intrigued to see what he does. He's probably going to take them on some big kind of cosmic space epics or some crazy-ass shit that Bendis is known for, but I want to see his take on these characters. To the best of my knowledge, I would assume aside from House of M, he hasn't really written much X-Men just by themselves. I could be wrong on that. You guys can correct me. But yeah, I think that was about it. Did I miss anything?
No. Also, I forgot to mention, Jason Aaron will be leaving The Incredible Hulk, this horrible series that's been going on. So yeah, he's off there. No word on, and no word on who's taking over, but yeah, he's leaving too. Brian, musical chairs.
All right. Guess I'll start at the top with Brubaker. I do enjoy most of his writing, but again, I say a lot of his writings that I enjoy are mostly his independent work and not so much his mainstream Marvel issues. I remember I picked up a little bit of his Captain America run, like back around the time before Cap was killed, and then right around during the transfer from the Bucky, I kind of picked that up in between, but it really just, it didn't click with me, but then again, I'm not a huge Captain America fan to begin with, so that could just be me. What title is he taking over again? He's taking over Iron Man, did you say?
Yeah, Kieran Gillen will be taking over Iron Man once my fraction.
Oh, I'm talking about Brubaker.
Colin Bunn, I'm sorry.
No, okay. I guess there's that. I'm not really sure I'm going to be checking out that when the times come for a changing. The same cannot be said for Jonathan Hickman, though. I mean, Hickman has consistently proven to be one of my favorite writers, even though he can sometimes hit and miss depending on what the title is.
He's the American Grant Morrison.
Yes, very well put. And so for him to get on Avengers, because he's already doing Ultimate Avengers, Ultimate Marvel, but for him to get actually
well, he's off that book, and Sam Humphries will be the full-time writer. So
for him to get the mainstream Avengers title, I'm kind of interested to see what he does with it, because now he's playing with a much bigger, more stuck in its ways sandbox. And so for him to try and take that on will be very interesting to see for me personally, just because I like Hickman, I like what he does. So I'm waiting to see how that pans out. As far as Astonishing Avengers goes, I'm probably going to get some heat for this, I don't know, but I have never really picked up any of the Astonishing books.
They are, let me explain to you, the only one I've read was Astonishing Wolverine and Spy. They're basically, think like Marvel Knights, think like that. They're supposed to be
out of continuity. Okay, so they're like kind of self-contained, yeah. But they relate to each other. Okay, I get what you're saying.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I don't know why they don't just call it Marvel Knights, but it's...
Right. What I do know is that Rick Remender and Jerome Pena together create magical fantasy goodness.
Fuck yeah, they do.
Oh my god. They are such a good team, and they create such good stuff. And so I will be picking up that book without hesitation when it drops. And I will be looking forward to them rocking Astonishing Avengers, much like they rocked Uncanny X-Force once upon a time. And Matt Fraction and Salvador LaRocca on Fantastic Four. It's an interesting move. You go from writing one sort of techie, science-y book to writing kind of another techie, science-y book. And Fraction, well, you know, Matt Fraction is Matt Fraction. And so for him to try and take over Fantastic Four, I don't think it'll be too difficult. But
he's used Reed Richards in his run, so.
Right, yeah. So it's not like he's a complete stranger to the characters, but now he's going to be writing about, you know, the first family of Marvel. He's going to be writing about all these different characters and how they're playing off one another. And even though, I believe it was Hickman who kind of, you know, bogged down the titles a little bit when he came in, he still kind of got that dynamic down. And for other writers to try and tackle that, it can be hit or miss for them, especially when you're concerning with, now it's like, there's the Four, and there's like the whole Future Foundation, and so there's a lot to consider when taking on a book like the Fantastic Four, and so to see how that'll pan out, it's certainly going to be a challenge, I believe, for Fraction, but I do have faith that he can do it. That said, the one concern I do have about these musical chairs thing is the whole concept, because while these names being moved around different titles are some of the biggest in the industry, they are also writers who don't tend to write the characters. They let the characters and story conform to what they are used to writing. You see it happen a lot, and I don't blame them for it, because that's just the way they are. And that's, you know, they've produced good stuff before, but you read some of their titles, broad spectrum, and a lot of it can feel like a similar tone or characterizations. And so I know a lot of writers have different tendencies, but for them to try and do this, I'm just hoping that it doesn't turn out to be like the X-Men are just now going to be the Avengers, the same dynamic and all that stuff. And then, you know, you see like Avengers all of a sudden get like very sciencey and, you know, just quasi-philosophical. And then all of a sudden, Reed Richards is a playboy driving around in a suit of armor. And you see freaking Astonishing X-Men Avengers take on Apocalypse. And, you know, it just stuff like that. I don't want to see each story become...
You don't want to see... you don't want repeats. You don't want...
Yeah, I don't want the stories to be the exact same stuff that I was writing before, just the different names on the people. You know, I don't want that. And like I said, these are people whose names often get bigger than the characters they write, and that's a very big risk when putting someone like Bendis or Hickman on a book. And so these changes are coming about. I think they'll breathe fresh air into the titles themselves and give it a good shot at being picked up again, give it some new longevity. But if it just pans out to be the same old hat, what am I sticking around for? I could just go back and read my Avengers and not pay a damn thing. So I'm hoping that everything gets a different feel to it, but I hope that it doesn't become what we've already seen. So I guess that's just my two cents about it.
All right. Well, Taser, do you have any thoughts on musical chairs?
No.
All right. Well.
Really, dude?
Taser doesn't give a fuck.
I don't care about, you know, writers and artists. All I care about is the story.
But they craft the story. You should
some
care.
Of them. See, here's the thing. Some of them, I've read stuff by good writers that I liked, and I've read stuff most recently by Abnett and Lanning, you know, on New Mutants that I thought sucked, you know. But they've done other things that I like. But I'm reading what I'm reading because I want to read that. It doesn't matter to me too much who's coming on it. You know, I'll find out how well they do as I'm reading it. I'm actually kind of done with New Mutants because this run with them on it's been like, so, you know, I'll probably jump back on when they're gone. So they're finished telling the stories that they want to tell. I'll see how the new people on. But in general, I don't really care. Never have.
All right. Well, speaking of stories, guys, we got a little less than a month away from San Diego Comic-Con 2012.
Woo! Oh, I'm not going. Boo!
I'm going to go crazy.
Which I know Arnold is going to be there in the Gaslight District, living it up. So, with that noise, apparently, there was a con this past weekend with Heroes Con. I don't know. Apparently, Marvel has released a teaser, two teaser images, simply titled "This Is War," October 2012, with Thor's hammers being broken and Wolverine's hand being burnt to a crisp. Through some scourings of the internet, it turns out that for the last 7 years or so, in almost every Marvel comic book you can, Dan Slott has been dropping references to something in the future of the Marvel Universe called The Reckoning War. That seems to involve The Watcher, The Fantastic Four, Gauntlet, Iron Man, Southpaw, and many more. In She-Hulk, we discovered from the Time Variance Authority that action by She-Hulk would lead to the Reckoning War. And this was a bad thing. It would devastate not only the Earth, but the whole cosmos. Marvel people have told that Slott had tried to get this plot to finally occur for some time. After a successful run on Amazing Spider-Man that has, for many people, turned the tanker around, could this be the moment at long last his reward is final reckoning? Let us find out in San Diego Comic-Con. Now, the whole Reckoning War, that's not confirmed. That's just speculation from people. I didn't know Dan Slott was doing that shit. Now, the fact that they're hinting that this could be off of a Dan Slott script is already a bad move already right there. That being said, I don't think this is an event. Although this is the first month after the AVX is over. AVX ends in September of this year. So,
Wait. You mean it doesn't end sooner? I got more months to go through this crap? Fuck!
I'm not going to... Brian's decision to make it the Book of the Week. I wasn't going to do it. Anyways.
I said you could drop it if you wanted to. Okay?
You're being a bitch. So, I hope this is going to be the Ultron War that I've been promised for almost going on 2 years now.
Someone's got a hard-on for the robot.
I love Ultron. He's a great villain.
Especially you liked when he took the form of Janet Van Dyne, didn't you?
Wait. Hold on. You mean to tell me that the thing that goes, I am superior to humans, stop beating on me, that's a great villain? Seriously?
I love the idea of Ultron.
Okay, I could buy that.
The idea of a supreme intelligence who can never die and he gets smart. I love that idea.
So you want to teach him a lesson, plug him into the internet and show him 4chan. That'll do some damage. He'll turn right around and leave.
It's hard to say
he
what this is.
He will never come back.
It's hard to say what this is, but we don't know. But I honestly hope. I don't care what this is. I just want some hints of the Ultron War that I've been promised. Of this doomsday-esque apocalypse of where Ultron takes over everything or tries to take over everything. That's what I want. I want a scary Ultron. And if this isn't it, well, then I just won't give a
fuck. Hold on. He took over Tony Stark's body. If that's not scary, come on now.
He also made him a
The scary thing about Ultron is
exactly,
he took over
Tony Stark's body and turned him into
Janet. He took his manhood.
There you go. Come on now.
Oh, that's the scariest villain ever.
Joking aside, the thing that makes Ultron scary for me is the fact that you can't really get rid of him, especially with this whole new he can jump AI, his AI can jump to different things.
That's always Hank Henshaw.
Which, funny enough, is what they're doing with Sinister right now in X-Men.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck.
In Uncanny X-Men, you kill one Sinister, his consciousness is transferred to somebody else. It's almost like a hive mind of Sinister town.
Well, hold on, wait a minute. Doom was doing that back in the 80s. You know, by the time
well, the whole hive mind thing isn't exactly new, but I like Ultron, so I win. Anyways, there isn't much to go on. I guess we'll find out more San Diego. I really hope that this isn't if it's another event, fuck it, it's what they're gonna do. But if I hope this isn't what Dan Slott like. Oh, I've been plotting seeds because I write Silver Age because he does write Silver Age. Nobody must die. I failed because somebody died, but the wrong person didn't. Anyways.
And you know she's not dead.
No, but I'm talking about Doc Ock should have died. Anyways.
No, we'll keep it for
him. Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to go, like I said, it's hard to go about based on what this is, but it's to drum up excitement. I don't know if it's drumming up excitement, maybe curiosity, well, what the fuck is this? But is it good excitement, bad excitement? Who's to know? I guess we'll find out in about, a month? less than a month now, because whatever. Taser, take it away. I don't care.
Wait a minute. I'm taking what where?
Do you care about this? I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. I really don't.
Arnold, join me in my dance slot hating.
Hell no.
What
the hell's the matter with
you? You're fired.
Well, I asked. I'm just going to wait till we hear more about it, because it's just a basic teaser image right now, to be completely honest. Not that I'm not looking forward to it or intrigued by it. I completely forgot about Ultron War until this story broke. And people were making suggestions as to what it could possibly be. And I, like you, had no idea about this dance slot reckoning thing, but okay, that's interesting. And he's been dropping hints, where has he been dropping them? See, I like Dan Slott, but that doesn't mean I'm going to defend him or defend every writer I like to. And they're like, where do they see you dropping these hints? Which, not to mention, the news of it is being revealed at a Spider-Man panel at San Diego Comic-Con. Not an Avengers panel, not any like big X-Men or anything like that. It's being dropped at a Spider-Man panel. So I don't know if that lends credibility to the Dan Slott thing or not, but I know when there's some story or even creative teams attached to it, then I might be excited or just be annoyed or just not care.
Brian, what about you?
Well, upon reading this whole little spiel about the Reckoning War, my first thought is, who's Southpaw? That's not even a joke. I honestly don't know who Southpaw is. Can someone explain that to me?
Means fights with left hand. I don't know.
Okay, and hey, moving on from...
left-handed fighter.
That still doesn't help because I still don't know...
He's going to make Spider-Man a lefty.
I don't... Okay, was Southpaw a title at some point, or is that just like...
I've never heard of a book called that. Seriously.
Okay, if you haven't heard about it, then that concerns me. Moving on from that. Upon review of this article, and it's...
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's fine. No, it's just, upon reading this article, I stop and I think, in almost every comic he has written, he's dropped references?
That sounds like a Dan Slott Silver Age.
That is commitment like you read about. Like, that is just, he wants this done. But then again, it also portrays the image of him, like, breaking into a board meeting. Okay, guys, seriously.
Have you
this
seen what he looks
war,
like? He totally
it's going
looks like
to be the greatest thing ever. You have to let me write it. Please, please, please.
That's exactly please. What he would do. I promise you.
And then kind of like Bendis and Quesada just like shake their heads at one another. And it's like, okay, stop. Just go. Go. Go write Spider-Man now. Okay? Okay. We got to get rid of that guy. It portrays the image of, really? What is so great about the story that makes you actually write references in every book that you've written? What is so great about this story in your mind that makes it worth all this trouble? I honestly couldn't come up with a reason off the top of my head why Dan Slott would want the story put through so bad. I don't know. Maybe he's working on another adult fiction She-Hulk book where he can insert it into the continuity and be like, hey kids, She-Hulk naked. I don't know. As far as Ultron War goes, though, I could care less, because I really don't like Ultron. I just don't. I mean, what more do you want me to say? Ultron's kind of a supervillain anyway. I mean, it doesn't appeal to me. So I guess it's really up in the air at this point what I feel about this. I mean, it could be that I actually am going to be so excited for this that I start freaking out. Or it could be that I just kind of look at it on the rack, flip through it, go, meh. Put it back and walk away. But then you know, Dan Slott's involvement, I don't know. He could be hit or miss. I don't really know. I read enough of his stuff where I can predict that. You're probably a better judge than I am, Ben. So that's just my two cents, though. I mean, I honestly don't understand what could be so fantastical, amazing about this story. But we'll wait and see.
I don't know, I just hope he's not the guy who's going to be writing it, because if it's anything like Ends of the Earth or Spider Island, a lot more people are going to be mad than I am, and they'll understand why I have the hate for this, not for the man personally, but for his writing. Well, there you go. Reckoning War. I don't know. It's not Reckoning War, is it? Ultron War.
It's This Is War.
This Is War. March out. Okay. So let's move on to another war with Avengers vs. X-Men number 6. That's our book of the week, according to Brian.
What the hell, man? Hey. Why are you so here to pass the buck like it's a big deal or
you
something?
You said it was okay when we recorded the RPG show.
He narked you out, dude. Nobody cares. Nark.
I told you. You said it's like, fuck it. So anyways.
Nobody cares that we had to read it. I was reading it anyway.
I was going to look at it for lulz, and then, you know, it was mid-book of the week, and I went, okay, let me be serious. And then I read it back to lulz.
Podcast lulz.
Well, here we are. Part 6 of 12, Avengers vs. X-Men. This time...
entering Act 2, ladies and gents.
Act 2. Those 12 issues bi-weekly paced differently. So, here we are, Hickman writing it. This time, the next several issues will be drawn by Olivier Coypel. And let's just say, the best thing, absolute best thing about this issue was Coypel. The man can draw a page. Everything just looks supreme and beautiful and amazing. Especially that first shot of Magneto and this new created utopia the Phoenix Force 5 have created.
I love that name.
Phoenix Force 5!
They're already called the Phoenix 5. So, basically...
Don't go Phoenix Force 5! Hey, say that 5 times really fast.
So basically what's happened is, after the end of issue 5, where the Phoenix Force, after Tony Stark had disrupted it, had now been jumped into the five Avengers in Cyclops, Emma Frost, Magic, Colossus, and Namor, they have now, quote, have been rebuilding the Earth. And it really reminded me, but in a less aggressive way, of the Authority, in that we're going to fix things. And, you know, you have them, like, giving water to other places, like, to basically...
Pax Utopia, everybody!
They're making the world functional. And, of course, you know, making it possible for mutants to be okay.
Really? All 205 of them? Seriously?
That's what they're doing.
That's a false argument. Oh, that's his bullshit argument.
That's what these... That's it's for mutant kind. That's what Cyclops...
Really? Okay, so if when we see mutants moving all across the planet and to other places...
I'm not speaking for myself.
I'm arguing against the argument. That's what I'm doing. Because it's bullshit.
It's what you know? He's defending what he believes he's doing it for mutants. Uh-huh. That's his whole thing. That's what this whole thing's been about. You're doing this because we're mutants. We're doing this to help mutants and to help us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So either way, we have this, and of course, as they should be because they're mutants, Captain Steve Rogers and the Avengers are like, well, we got to prepare for the worst. Apparently, Beast doesn't agree with anybody anymore, and he doesn't. I don't say he quits the Avengers, but he doesn't want to. He kind of goes off and because. He quit the X-Men, and now he doesn't agree with what the Avengers are doing because they want to kill they're planning to take out, take them out. So we get some Iron Fist bullshit, I guess. they have declared Pax Utopia. Towards the end of the book, the Avengers decide to launch a mission to rescue Hope Summers because she is the catalyst, I believe, that leads to the Scarlet Witch jumping in, and she has a premonition of the Phoenix Force wiping out the original Avengers team from the first incarnation, you know, Hulk.
The original Avengers team insert Captain America
plus
as
Captain
well.
America. Yeah, there you go.
Bullshit.
Well, he joined at issue 4, so it's not
whatever.
He joined at issue 4. It wasn't exactly. It's not like they put Hawkeye in there.
Yeah. Didn't they have?
You call it revisionist history? I think it was.
No, Hulk had left by the time.
Yeah, but he's in that picture.
Yeah, but it's...
revisionist history!
No, see, there you go.
It's revisionist. It's what Wanda knows better. The original...
No, Wanda would know!
What the fuck does Wanda know? Holy shit.
Because everybody knows Hulk was a founding Avenger. Everybody knows Steve only... They were together for, a week after they had joined together?
Oh, no. It could have been hours the way Marvel time goes.
Regardless, it's the original plus Steve Rogers. Better. So they assault the team. They assault Pax Utopia just to get back Hope Summers. Somehow they get out. I did like, for some, and I'm a Thor fan, I did like seeing Cyclops pwn Thor. I thought that was nice. And for some reason, Scarlet Witch, her chaos magic affects the Phoenix Force, which I thought, that's interesting. And finally, Cyclops says, basically makes a proclamation, they're never going to give up, they're never going to stop, they're never going to come for us, and that the heroes, despite their sins against mutants, they can always rely on the heroes. So he finally says, no more Avengers. And if you use the Marvel augmented reality app and you hold it over there, it actually shows Cyclops disintegrating that little piece of A that came off. Not with his visor, just with his mind. which I thought was kind of cool. I don't need your sarcasm now. So I thought this issue was still damn good. I really love the way... I love characters like the way Cyclops is approaching. I love just sort of this... I don't want to say bad guy, because I don't think Cyclops is a bad guy. I don't think he's a bad guy in Terror, but I like characters who talk like that, of the greater good, but maybe they aren't doing it exactly the right way that they should
be. He's a character that very much exemplifies the ends justify the means. He's that kind of guy.
Yeah, in a way. I like characters like that. I just, all he needed is like a long flowing red cape, and he would have been the perfect character for me. I still love the designs of the Phoenix Force 5, especially Emma's. You know, I love this concept. I love that Black Panther continues to be the voice of reason, and that, you know, in that, like, we can't do this, that he basically calls Tony Stark out a liar for, like, that's not what they fucking said. Here's what they said. And Tony Stark tries to tell them an abridged version of it. So, I mean, I thought it was a very good issue. It takes the series in a new, unique way. You know, what the hell does No More Avengers mean? Does that mean that I don't know what it means. Is time travel going to be involved? Because, I mean, that's the hint. That's the hint that I got. What does No More Avengers mean? But Coypel was solid. I thought the writing was really strong, and I really want to see how this is going to end, because everything's kind of just jumbled up in the air, and I'm curious to see where the fuck can you take this next. I want to see Thor get pwned again. Taser, go ahead and get on your hating.
I'll say this. For the most part, whenever a hero gains ultimate power and starts doing the whole, but I just want to help the world, I'm doing it for you, so there be no more strife and suffering and blah, 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 blah. You know it's not going to end well. The only time I've ever seen somebody gain holy gee whiz fuck levels of power and didn't, you know, explode was the Distinguished Competition's fourth Green Lantern, okay? You know who we're talking about. He did it, and he managed to actually keep his wits about him, and he didn't make nobody nervous except Superman.
All right? Yeah, but he's always nervous.
Well, fair enough. But Marvel-wise, we had Thor doing it. We had...
Beast even makes a mention in the book. No. He says, like, are we going to... Is Thor too powerful? Should we keep an eye on him?
Yeah. See, people don't remember that because Thor went and kind of rewrote that whole time segment. So he went and changed reality to kind of... Well, it didn't happen. So there you go. He pulled a Wanda. The Squadron Supreme did this. They did something very, very similar to this back in the 80s where they set themselves up as, okay, we're powerful, we're justice-oriented, we mean to do what's right, we're running things, and we mean you no harm, until the things that they were doing were actually harmful to people. You know, having holy gee whiz fuck levels of power and then wanting to fix the planet so that people don't have to worry about it, but also having the viewpoint that, yeah, because I don't trust them. They're humans. They're the problem. you know that's not going to go well. So right away, you can't help but sit back and go, now, how badly is this going to turn out? And you know, this is kind of interesting now because it's something I'm waiting for. And I know, what is it, within a month or two, that, you know, the Phoenix Force 5 is going to be fighting each other.
Scott wants to go solo. He wants
yeah,
a solo
exactly.
career.
You know that's going to happen. So I want to see how that implosion goes down. But that aside, this was a... Well, the lead story was a... It was solid, I guess. You know, it... You knew what was going to happen for the most part once they said, we're going to go to Utopia and get Hope. Yeah, okay, that's not going to end well, but yeah, let's see how badly it goes. And sure enough, you have Hammerstrike. Oh, shit, he caught it. Oh, fuck.
That was a cool page. You got to admit that. That was a cool
page. Oh, my God. Zing!
But then it got infinitely better. When you got Wanda and her whole, I'm just here because I need to take Hope because I need to take Hope and I'm a mage and this is the thing I do now. La 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 la. And he goes, the fuck, bitch, get over. And hey, I touched you and I felt something. Oh God, I'm scared now. You know, I don't intimidate you. My penis is not super powerful against you. Uh-oh, somebody hug me. And, you know, he just stands there looking like a retard and then looking at, you know, a piece of Captain America's whatever. And, yes, the Avengers getting spanked by Cyclops one-shotted. But, yes, yeah, so what? You know, this book was standard. I mean, it was well-done standard, but it was standard. And thumbs up to Coypel for telling it. My favorite part was the second part. By Wade and who's this guy?
Let's get to the main story, then we'll go around and talk about the.
Well, okay.
That's why I didn't talk about
the main story. It was solid. It told the story. It moved things along. Thumbs up to Coypel. Solid art. Really solid art. I give it. I got to be honest and give it 3.5 warriors. It was the story itself wasn't great. I'm giving it mostly for the art. You know. But if you're reading AVX, I don't think this will disappoint.
It didn't disappoint me. Arnold, Avengers vs. X-Men number 6. What did you think of the issue?
This was definitely, art-wise, right out the gate, I'm going to say, getting out of the way, I agree with you guys completely. Coypel's art is fantastic. I forgot how much I missed seeing it till I got it now. So kudos on that. That right out the gate definitely gets props in my book. Story has been better than some of the other issues, and as Taser said, it's moving the story along. I'm going to focus on Scott a bit in this storyline. I don't know if it's the Phoenix Force affecting him or what, but he is the most backpedaling or, you know, fickle person ever in this story. He is going back and forth through emotions like nobody's business. You start off the book being all nice and pleasant to Hope, telling her it's not a prison, you can leave if you want to. 3 pages later, you're talking about the power of the Phoenix Force and practically taunting her with it and then being like, well, nope, you can't have it. And apparently you weren't good enough for it anyway, so I've got it now. And I'm
psych.
Like, what? What is that about? And then, again, a little bit later down the road, remember, earlier in the issue, he told her this is not a prison, you can leave when you want. Wanda says, you come with me. Hope says, I want to go. And Scott's like, wait, correction. You can leave if you want, but not with her.
Not with those people.
Not with that chick. She's bad news. Like, we don't like her as it is already.
To be fair, she did kind of decimate their entire race.
No, I'm fully aware, but...
Okay. Yeah, and they let her go.
I don't...
Twice!
Ripe as it is.
Twice now. Right. And this time they could have done something about it.
Freaking garbage.
The bits with the Avengers stuff is cool, too. I love how they all got, like, super mech suits. That was kind of interesting to see how they implemented around people's weapons and stuff like that. I, too, enjoy the voice of reason that is Black Panther, which translates to, seems to be, in any medium they put Black Panther in, he always seems to play that role in the voice of reason. Even in the Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon, he's always that other side or that other voice, you know, on the other side of your shoulder that's like, wait, let's look at it from this angle, you know, let's step back a minute. So that's always done well in this, or was done well. Taser, I cannot agree with you, or I'm not sure, Ben, either. Some of these costumes are terrible. I can't. I'm not a fan of Cyclops.
All Cyclops is a red cape.
I like
awesome.
Having Dick Grayson in X-Men, okay? I think it's awesome.
If you want the DC new Dick Grayson in X-Men, this is your book. Emma Frost, she would not be walking out of her house wearing that.
She turns it
No, this is too. Where you draw the line? Really?
No, I'm sorry. This is going from a fashionable standpoint, and knowing the kind of person Emma is and seeing all the other shit that she's worn, Emma would not wear this.
You know, it's interesting. She brings new meaning to the term fire crotch. I just wanted to put that out.
Oh,
another thing for Jean Grey to kick her ass now.
What's that?
So I'm assuming the Phoenix Force wiped out the whole Jugger Colossus because he got his hair back. He's looking all well and good. And I don't understand why you would feel the need to put shoulder pads on a man who does primarily a lot of stomach.
Because shoulder pads are cool.
Yeah, the 90s.
It is the 90s.
He had, like, pointy shoulder pads when he first came up, so that's not nothing new to Colossus.
Not Colossus. I'm talking about Namor.
Oh, Namor. I don't know.
Namor came with his speedo on originally, where's his, like, fire speedo.
And his black scale, his black straps all around. I'm just not a fan of these costumes. I'm sorry. So I can't agree with you guys on that. But overall, it was one of the better issues of Avengers versus X-Men. Most of my qualms really are just a lot of nitpicks and stuff, aside from that story stuff, because I don't know. I need to figure out what they're doing with Scott, because, again, there's still no connection. I guess maybe we'll get into it a little bit more with the next book we talk about, but I still feel like there wasn't and hasn't and may not be that moment of Scott where he's like, wait, I remember all of the other times that this has happened. It always starts out good, but ends very, very badly. Because as comics and history have shown us, when you try to give the entire world what it wants, it never works out well.
Exactly.
Yeah. It doesn't work out well for anybody. It's not possible to give everybody what they want.
If I might interject. Sorry, yeah. I just wanted to interject for a hot second. Remember that scene when the Avengers, they infiltrate and they try to grab Hope, and it, you know, goes horribly wrong. And Wolverine's sitting there about to get blasted, and he closes his eyes.
Oh!
And then you have that Korean thing in front of
him.
Yeah, what the hell? I assume that's going to come up later, probably, that whole thing with Hope and Iron Fist and whatever, but that's something. You know, I mean, look at that. Can you imagine seeing something headed your way? You're about to go, oh, God! You know, it's Bohica time! And get it in! You know, play like some Shaw Brothers background music. Bah, 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 bah. Like, what the fuck is that? And I don't think, at this point, Hope hasn't had any contact with, you know, Iron Fist. So, like, what is that?
I'll be getting to that in New Avengers, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, just wait for that.
But I know about that. But see, that would mean that something would have to happen. Oh, never mind. Continue, please.
You just hurt your head now, ain't you?
Yeah.
But
I'm thinking too hard.
I will give it a good solid 3 out of 5.
Brian.
Yes.
Go for it.
I just want to quickly touch upon it before it becomes an afterthought. I do agree with what Arnold said about how you often see in comics you try to give people the best of the best, and yet it never works out for any good whatsoever. And I believe I recall there was an independent book put out at one point called The Last of the Greats. It literally, the whole premise was that these super powerful beings gave people everything they wanted, but the humans felt they couldn't trust them, and they turned on them, killing every single one of them, even though they had given them absolutely everything. And it's just...
That's funny.
Oh, it was fucking... Because now... I'll tell you about the book after the show, because it's really
okay,
cool. Anyway, this book itself... Koi Pal did great art, as you as expected. The whole thing with them kind of, you know, being like, hey, we gave you everything. Peace out. Leave us alone. All that junk. It made me think for a second, you know, what exactly is the end game? Like, what would have happened if they just left them alone? Honestly, what would have happened if the world just
they
left them
alone? The idea is that, I think, as with Jean was in control with the Phoenix for the longest time, all it took for was for one instance and she became evil.
Right.
I think that's what they're worried about, revisionist history and all that. But
yeah, Scott just trips over a rock one day.
who's to say somebody who, I mean, I don't know how, but like the concern is that, yeah, like what the example is Jean Grey, she was in control of the Phoenix for a good while after she acquired Phoenix powers. And it wasn't, and all it took was for one instance of manipulation. That's to say that these characters would be manipulated. They could be. But that's what they're worried about. Because imagine if what one can do, imagine what five in different places could do.
But I think what you're looking at here is Jean Grey, yeah, she had somebody that was messing with her that kind of flipped that switch. But here you have five people some of whom have a bent in how they view the world. You know, Cyclops.
There you go.
And somewhat Emma. And
Namor.
Yeah,
Namor.
He's not taking a, hands-off approach. He's being proactive. And, you know, when you're proactive, that means you have to stay on top of things, which means you get more and more in people's lives, which means you become, you know, overlord. You can be benign or malevolent, but that's what you become. And having that level of power in that position, yeah, that's a problem. You know, cause, and on top of which, he's telling them what to do. He's not offering. It's one thing when you offer. It's one thing to say, hey, I have an apple. If you would like it, please take as you will. He's saying, I'm planting an apple tree for everybody. You will all be able to have it and stop fighting. You know,
stop bickering, okay?
Yeah, stop bitching. He's telling them what to do, and you know, there's quite a few nations that won't like that.
Yeah,
I'm waiting to see Doom pop up in this.
Oh,
you know, so there you go. I'm waiting to see that happen.
I do find it funny that every single member of the Phoenix Force Five, every single member of the Phoenix Force Five is someone who has something of a checkered past as far as their careers as quote-unquote heroes go. You know, like Emma's a former villainess, I suppose. Colossus was running around the Juggernaut not too long ago. Magic's magic. No, but the thing is, each single one of these characters has sort of a checkered past in how they view the world.
Magic has a checkered past? Since when?
Since Darkchild, dude. Where the hell have you been?
I don't fucking care. Either way, what did you think of rating the final issue? What did you give this issue?
Hey, I'm not done talking yet.
Oh, Mr. T.
I just have one. I do have one more thing to question/point out, though. Is some of these people that the Phoenix? Do we know how powerful the Phoenix is as far as being a psychic force goes?
It pretty much
very,
very, yeah,
very, very.
Okay, yeah. Because here's my question. I mean, I can see the Phoenix outmatching Satorak, the Juggernaut's little gem guy, and now Colossus isn't his vessel anymore, and that's. At least he doesn't appear to be. So that's one question I have hanging over my head. And then, like I said, there's the whole Darkchild thing with magic and that.
Phoenix Force is one of the most dangerous entities. It's feared for a reason.
Yeah, but here's the thing. We've actually seen, and I remember this is the instance in particular I want to bring up, Cyclops being infected with the void and smothering it in his psyche, saying, you won't come out unless I tell you to. And we haven't seen it anywhere since. And this is the Void, mind you, one of the other most powerful entities in the whole goddamn universe.
Yep, the Void is also gone because Bob Reynolds is gone.
Do we know that for a fact?
Bob Reynolds is pretty much dead. I mean,
well, that may be, but
okay, this is fucking 2010 territory. Sentry was the Void. Void was Sentry. You kill one of them, you kill both of them. Simple. There you go.
That's pretty much how they wrote that, but I mean, are we sure did they have a body?
Yes, it was a skeleton. Thor nuked his ass.
The thing was, the little robot thing that ran the Sentry's apartment or whatever said
oh
he was going to go
there. Why are we talking about Sentry and Avengers?
Okay, off topic anyway. Point is, Cyclops himself is one of the most, as far as psychic-wise, he knows how to handle shit like this.
He's had a second rapport with Jean Grey.
He's had first-hand experience with the Void, taking it out, and also he's been around the Phoenix long enough to know a good chunk of what the fuck is going on up in his head.
Maybe the Phoenix is playing more into it and manipulating him more.
I just want to know what the hell the Phoenix like whispered into his ear to get him to be like, okay, I'm not going to fight this.
Maybe the Phoenix is pulling more strings, because when Jean Grey was fighting the X-Men, revisionist history, it was the Phoenix talking through the voice of Jean Grey.
Who's
to say that this is the voice of the Phoenix, but because it's splintered, it could be equal, because it's not just one person, it could be splintered, because Cyclops, it's through five people, and Cyclops has a little bit more control, but the Phoenix is still speaking to him.
I'm just pointing out the fact that each of these characters, on top of having checkered past, they all have had experience with cosmic level beings at some point or another,
the Void doesn't compare to the Phoenix.
Wait.
How do you know that for a fact? Okay, this thing nearly destroyed Earth.
Especially now, because the person who was behind it all is dead.
I'm talking back at its... Okay, look, we're getting off topic. Point is, 4 out of 5, issue was good. I'm looking forward to the rest of the story. Let's move on to individual reviews.
That should be a good topic, the Phoenix versus the Void.
Talking about the peak.
What about this? What if, because Cyclops has had past dealings with the Phoenix, what if he's actually controlling the other four?
That wouldn't be... He is kind of presumed the alpha male here.
Exactly. He's the lead singer.
What if the Phoenix Force is pulling the strings and Cyclops is pulling the strings to the other Phoenix Force?
Yeah.
And that the reason why... Well, Emma seems to have her... Colossus... And Magic Era.
We don't get a lot of FaceTime with any of the other three. We get more FaceTime with
Emma
Scott
seems
and Emma.
To be in controls, but it's not beyond the reason. See, this is why I love this. So, all right, real quick, guys, The Infinite, which was basically Dr. Manhattan meets Cyclops in a way.
Scott being a bitch.
Okay.
Oh my god!
I mean, that's pretty apt. That's basically what that was. That's exactly what that was. It's like, am I doing harm here? Let me try to work this out amongst myself.
Yeah,
I know. I'll remake my old dead girlfriend wife.
Right. It's the coping mechanism of Jean Grey again. I can't figure this out on my own, so to help me figure this out on my own, I'm going to recreate the person I could always talk to and have a conversation with myself.
I thought it was good. Nice little... I thought it was good. It had nice solid art. I thought it was a nice... Considering AVX kind of gives him the Machiavellian-esque, you know, appeal to him, this one sort of centers a little bit more about... You know, that question of morality, that's why I asked up, is the Phoenix Force controlling him? Is it the other way around? That's why I brought it up. I thought it was very good. And I like
if he could actually control the Phoenix Force, that would be some balls.
Well, Rachel's done it, but revisionist history. Yeah. I thought overall it was really good. Did y'all agree or what? Or did y'all thought it was bad?
Nah, I liked it.
For the most part.
All right, Brian. Did you thought it was bad or good? Good, bad.
Yeah, I thought it was okay.
This, like I said before, and I mentioned in the book. Sorry that I will say that I was saving for the Infinite book. This is slightly what I was saying that I wanted to see going on with Scott. Like there had seemed to be no doubt in his mind or anything like that. It was just like boom, boom, boom. Almost like he was planned and ready for all of this to happen. So you know, he goes back to. The blue side of the moon and relieving that whole thing with Jean. I thought it was a very interesting conversation, and the whole, you know, have I lost my humanity, and, you know, the comment at the end, you wouldn't be creating your ex out of moon dust if you hadn't, you know, stuff like that. I want to see how much that conversation will affect future actions, if at all, or if it'll affect it in the way we think, which will lead him, which I'm assuming or hoping it'd be like, well, let me step back a minute and look at how this works out, or if it's like, no, this is the proof that the way I'm going about things is right, which is kind of what we don't want from what I'm gathering so far. But it was interesting. It was cool to see. With the art and stuff, I forgot that it was digital only.
Yeah. So like, if you read this sort of in other ways, it kind of took away what it was supposed to be. At least
right.
I, I mean, I can't speak for that because I read it digitally, but.
Yeah, but like, yeah, with the link we had, I forgot, because for a minute I was going to comment on the fact that I was like, dude, there are a shit ton of splash pages in this. I feel bad for anybody that paid money for it. And then it was like a page or two later when I was like, oh, wait, this was digital only. Okay, that's not that bad anymore.
It reads that, differently, yeah.
Yeah, then once I realized it was digital, I was okay with the spacing and everything like that. Because for a while there, I was like, what the fuck? Like, there's like two words per page on every page of this. But it was cool. I liked it. I'm digging that. I don't read a lot of the digital stuff, but I do like these little, I guess, kind of side stories vignette that you can kind of digitally if you want, or jump in. Even some of the augmented reality stuff. I hope that they do more than just what they've been doing. A lot of these is just showing you the artwork or someone sketching it while it's in front of the book. I like the thing with the distance grading A that they did at the end of AVX. So it was cool. I liked it from a digital standpoint. It was good. I don't know how much it was. I'm assuming it was on like a buck or two.
$1.99. Which,
so
give or take on your value. But all right, anything right else to say, guys, before we move on?
I thought it was awesome.
I didn't even think about making the Dr. Manhattan connection until I saw it on the forum. I'm like, oh yeah, it kind of is. Goes to the moon, talks to a, you know,
dust.
Well, I mean, the whole powerful being searching who himself it was very much in that vein. I'm pretty sure Mark Waid was conscious of that, given who he is. So yeah, Brian, did you like this or did you not read this at all?
Like I said, I thought it was okay. I mean,
all right.
As far as contributing to the story goes, it was kind of redundant. I mean, why do you create someone who's just gonna say what your psyche would say to you anyway? It just seems kind of pointless, but.
You have deep memories of your person, of the person you know, and you know that's probably what the person would say.
But who was to say those memories are even what you consider them to be now that you're possessed by the Phoenix? I mean, it's a whole existential thing, but it's too deep to get into.
Yeah, so let's move on to individual reviews, and I'm going to go first with a book that should be talked about is The Punisher, number 12. Obviously, this whole storyline has been wrapped around the Omega Drive plus Rachel Cole Alves in that. She's been killing members of the Exchange. This finally, Frank Castle finally discovers what drives her to kill, to be fighting back against them, and he basically confronts her and basically calls her stupid, sentimental, and basically time to get your shit squandered away, Marine. He headbutt. Basically, it's a very brutal, realistic fight. Chichetto it's in the rain too, so it's this grim fight. Frank Castle is not afraid to hit a woman when needed be. He's not above that. And he basically calls her out and says, you can't be fighting for this reason. It's stupid, you're sentimental, it's distracted. A distraction soldier is a dead soldier, and you're no good that way. And in a way, he basically gives her the biggest man the fuck up talk in the history of man the fuck up talks. And he's like, he basically says, the dead don't get music, dead don't get beauty, the dead don't get color, flavor, or warmth, or worship, because the dead don't feel. You think they killed you? You think they spared you? No, you're dead. And she kind of cries a little bit. It's like, well, it always gnaws at me. And, you know, it's there. I don't know how to get over it. How do you make it stop? And he says, only the living get over it. If you want to make it stop, he basically tells her to surrender to the cops. He's like, either you're on the mission or not. The dead can't be distracted. And it ends with her burning the picture of her wedding photo, sort of ceremoniously that she's moved on. I thought this was a really strong issue. It shows the strengths of both the character of what Greg Rucka can do, writing a strong female character, plus just the uncaring but yet driven mentality of Frank Castle that I kind of admire in a person, but not in the killing kind of way. You know, just that unending drive of that you can't have anything distract you. You have to keep going, and I love that idea. Plus, Chichetto, with his art, he's the perfect artist for the Punisher. It's not grim and gritty enough. Everything's distinguishable. He has great storytelling bits. He has great storytelling. You can tell what's going on from panel to panel. You're never lost. Each character has their own distinct face. The fight sequences are dynamic. You can see the emotion written on the characters, which to a lot of artists, they just draw the face, and it's but so much more is told into the story when you're just looking at the character's face and you can read that emotion, whether they're angry or just maybe not have zero emotion at all. Plus, I love the fact that Frank Castle still has an eye patch over his eye because of his fight with the Vulture and the sort of real-world-esque consequences that when Frank fights a supervillain, sometimes he's going to get effed over, and an eye injury is no easy feat to recover from. But overall, I give this a 5 out of 5. This is a fantastic issue. If you had been reading Punisher since issue 1, and I think Gamera, I think he's still reading it, This is sort of like a big payoff to everything that's been happening since issue 1, and now we're going to go on to the next thing, and it's been fantastic. So I encourage everybody to jump on with Punisher number 13, because it's not just Punisher killing people in introspective. It's really good. Let's go to move to Brian with New Avengers number 27, Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
Yes. Spider-Man. Okay, so if you've been reading the New Avengers arc since the Phoenix thing got started, then you know that it's mostly been detailing the past of a girl named Feng Ji, a red-headed resident of Kunlun who Master UT trained to not wield the Phoenix Force, training her in the ways of the Iron Fist. Now, this issue starts off by telling you what happened when the Phoenix actually arrived, and when it embraced Feng Ji, she actually seemed to get some control of it, some manner of control over it. However, it looked to be very soon into it she was beginning to already kind of lose herself to the Dark Phoenix. And so to prevent anything bad from happening, and because the Phoenix, whatever she saw, knew that the Earth wasn't ready for it yet, she flew up into space and was never seen again. And then we pick up with Iron Fist, Danny Rand, telling Hope this story as they are sitting in Kunlun. Now, essentially, the idea is that if they train Hope the same way they train Feng Ji, then maybe she'll have a better chance of controlling the Phoenix when she finally decides to embrace it. Now, they decide to meditate upon this, and Hope has a vision of the Phoenix Force, quickly followed by a spider. Now, Master UT, for those of you who have read Iron Fist, know he is, he's kind of the go-to guy in Kunlun. He is the guy who makes shit happen. You know, he's kind of the guy who you turn to when you need answers. So, essentially, you think he would have some sort of deep, meaningful thought behind what could it mean when she sees a spider beside a phoenix? He immediately decides it's fucking Spider-Man. And Spider-Man is the one who will train Hope to master the Phoenix Force. To quote Spider-Man, say what now? He literally shared my reaction. Dumbstruck awe. What makes you think Spider-Man is any good for training Hope to master the Phoenix Force? Could someone please tell me that? Because it really just...
It's a comic book universe. There you go.
Oh my god.
Of course,
god.
It's got to be Spider-Man to save the day.
Anyway, there are a few things I like about this. First is just Spider-Man and Hope interacting is just fucking hilarious. He's just like, they're just standing there for a minute, and she's like, I'm not dressing like that. And he's like, okay, good, because there's already like 8 spider ladies running around. And then, after being provoked, he goes into a whole spiel explaining, with great power comes great responsibility, and what his Uncle Ben taught him. And this goes on for about 2 pages of him just talking at her. Finally, it stops in silent. And she runs after him like a fucking fangirl. Hey, no, hey, wait, what else did he say? Did he say anything else? Should I get a new costume? Where'd you get yours at? Maybe I should get a new costume. And that's the end of the issue. That's all we get from this issue. Spider-Man is the answer to everything, everybody. Spider-Man will save us from the Phoenix, everybody, because he's going to train Hope, and she's going to be amazing. She's going to have witty comebacks for when the Phoenix tries to invade her mind. She's going to be dressed like Spider-Woman, and the issue, it's hilarious for its mind-numbing illogicalness. Yes, illogicalness.
Illogicity?
Illogicity. Yeah, I'm going to go with that one. Thank you, Phaser. Illogicity. It's fucking crazy. This highly spiritual and philosophical race, who supposedly can see things we can only begin to fathom. Bundley decides the answer to fending off this all-consuming psychic energy force is a fucking kid from Brooklyn. Or wherever the fuck he's from. Queens. Staten Island, I don't know. Queens. Whatever. Yancey Street, whatever. Point is, this issue confuses the fuck out of me. How the hell am I supposed to take seriously that Spider-Man is going to save us from the Phoenix Force, huh? How am I supposed to take that seriously? Really?
I hate to tell you this, but Spider-Man was also very pivotal to the survival of the universe.
Oh, God.
I can go back and tell you the story.
Okay, after the show. We'll save the director's commentary.
A bit of Captain Universe.
No, this goes back before then.
Derail. Let's move on. Rate your book, Brian.
Hey, I haven't even rated my fucking issue yet, dude.
Whoa.
Anyway, I give it a 3 out of 5. Diodato's art is peerless. Bendis' writing is still up to par. But just the sheer audacity of this issue, it astounds me beyond... I can't talk anymore. 3 out of 5.
He used audacity. I give you cool points for that.
Thank you.
And because we're going to... The Man is Laughing. Taser, Winter Soldier number 7. A book we don't really talk about that much.
The what? Huh?
Yeah.
Me? Fuck! Damn it. Okay. Anyway, Winter Soldier 7, basically somebody's, you have a couple of Bucky's trainees had been woken up and were causing problems, and, you know, he thought he had the problem shut down, but apparently one of them had woke up because, the Soviets have a habit of sticking people in freezers for long periods of time.
Major one force.
One of them woke up a bit early due to an earthquake, naturally, kind of like Transformers, and was doing his own thing and was pretty disturbed to find out that his master, his teacher, Winter Soldier, was actually now a good American guy type dude. How dare he? Cursing at him in Russian, because I don't know Russian. So, in order to show his displeasure, he killed Fred Davis. He killed the Bucky of the dude who became Spirit of 17 of 76. What a cast replacement! I think the first one. The guy who went on to work and I think form was it V Battalion, if I remember correctly. I kind of remember this guy. I've read some stories. You son of a no good, filthy vodka drinker. You kill Bucky. Well, anyway. So, yeah, Fred Davis is dead. And now we must find this guy because apparently he's killing other people. You know, security guards and a doctor here and some schlub. You know, and he's kidnapped a professor. Ooh, he kidnapped a professor. And, you know, what's his name? Winter Soldier and his girlfriend du jour, Black Widow, are called in on the scene. And they're looking over stuff. You see people's bodies lying everywhere. Hey, look, I got a thing sticking out of my chest. I'm just going to lie here. Watch people walk over me. And she catches Winter. Hey, I know this guy. He was in the Red Room. Ooh, the Red Room. That's the place where Natasha Romanoff was trained to be, you know, the soldier that she, you know, the assassin, whatever, and, you know, recent revisionist history, because that's really what it was. and it was through there that they actually met decades ago, which also means that Natasha Romanoff has had something done to her to make her look younger. She got Nick Fury'd. She got Captain America'd. But, you know, it doesn't matter because she's hot and got red hair and is Russian. Anyway, so now they're looking for the guy and, you know, they've caught wind of a Winnebago leaving the scene. So, Sina, hop on a motorcycle. So, you know, speeding, catch up to the motorcycle. You know, Natasha does the infiltrate thing while Bucky rides on the side at the Winnebago. And, hey, look, there's tinted windows. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm a New Yorker, and when I see tinted windows, I don't pass the car. You know, I kind of hang back just in case somebody may decide to do what these guys did and start shooting through it. Shit. And, you know, it's kind of your standard, you know, she gets inside, she starts kicking butt, he gets inside, he sets the bike on autopilot. You know, I was like, hey, look, it's Street Hawk. Yeah. And, you know, evil Russian student of Winter Soldier starts shooting up his men because, well, that's what they do, I guess. And he dives out onto a SUV, which takes off, and, you know, Bucky goes, you go after him, Natasha. I've got it. There's a bomb in the back. I know because I know these things. I'll handle it. I'll save the people on the highway. So she jumps out onto the bike and rides after him. And, you know, he's, okay, have to find off-ramp. And in an off-ramp, hey, Sitwell, which is another thing. I have to segue here. He's got a attaché called Jasper Sitwell. Wasn't Jasper Sitwell a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who was also very old?
Nobody remembers.
I think he was one of the guys who got the Infinity Formula. So technically, he's kind of like Nick Fury-ish.
Yeah, but I mean, he was old. The guy we see here would have been Jasper Sitwell's grandson. You know, this is a young guy. I remember an old Jasper Sitwell, so I don't know. Maybe they just rebooted the character and nobody really cared because nobody remembered. But, all right, fan, that's just me. So, yeah, he's giving him, okay, you got a mile to go and you got a bomb in the back in, like, what, 45 seconds? In a freaking Winnebago. So he's flooring it. Okay. I've made the off-ramp, and I'm just going to ram it through and then jump out, and hold on, boom, woohoo! He saved the highway. Whatever.
He saved the highway?
Yeah, it blew up, and nobody died. Yay. You know, yay.
That's yay. The only climax I ever heard of.
It's a comic book, so, you know, it was a bomb in a Winnebago. The fuck you want?
There's a bomb in this taco stand!
See, now that's infinitely more dangerous. Hot sauce in your eye? Awful.
Totally. Sharp shards of taco shells flying everywhere? It's like shrapnel.
Sharp shards of cheddar.
Okay.
Anyway, Natasha did the tail thing, and she followed him to some facility, and she's playing dun 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 dun. Where the hell you go? And... oh, no, he gets the drop on her and he shoots her in the head with a taser. He was after her the whole time. And that's how the story ends, you know, with Black Widow getting caught, shot in the head with a taser. She got shot in the head with a taser. actually, this was a, I don't want to say fun book, but I didn't go meh. You know, I didn't feel like I don't need to read it again or touch it ever again. I enjoyed it. You know, I think I might actually pick up the next issue. I don't know if I'll go back and start over because, you know, I'm Taser and I don't need to do that. But I like this. If you're reading Winter Soldier, I don't think you'll be disappointed by this because this looks to be, you know, the... hard-hitting knuckle action, you know, and if you looked at the cover, that was like classic Bond pose, you know, him and Natasha standing back-to-back, shoots right at the screen, you know, explosions and what have you. It felt like, you know, 60s stuff. Had the car chase, you know, the dashing hero with the hot girlfriend who's also capable, you know. All they needed to do was karate poses and they would have had the whole look right there. I like the book. You know, the art was okay. The writing was okay. I have no idea who did either because I don't pay attention. It was fun. I give this book a 4 out of 5. I'm gonna pick up the next one, see where it takes me. Oh, yeah, and then it was Brubaker. Yeah, there you go, because we talked about this before. I don't care. I just have fun with the book.
Arnold, take it away. Take us home.
excuse me. We are going into Venom issue number 19, Savage Six Part 2. Not that it's ever been a good day to be Venom before, but it is really not a good day to be Venom, or at least in this case, not a good day to be Flash Thompson. When we last left him, he was on the run of sorts, or he picked up Betty Brant and rescued her because people are going after his family, as we saw last issue. So he finally decides that the only way to get her to calm down or stop fighting back is that he's going to have to show her who he really is. Or as we saw last issue, he revealed that he is actually Venom, and right after that happens, she smacks him across the face. They have a little bit of back-to-back, and Flash realizes that, no, these guys, Jack Lantern and the Fly and the likes, are going to still be going after his family. So he runs off to first go to his sister's house. On the way to his sister's house, he gets attacked by Megataki. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Gets called by Megataki. They make it to his sister's house. He leaves Betty outside, goes in, finds his brother-in-law, his sister's husband, lying in the bed with the top of his head sliced off and his eyes gouged out, a candle in it made to look like a jack-o'-lantern.
Nice! Nice!
He has a whole bunch of little, like, robotic devils under a blanket. They start fighting with Flash. He grabs Betty and runs out, and midway through his running, he finally runs into Jack-o'-lantern, and Jack-o'-lantern's got has got Flash's sister on the top of a bridge, no less. And while we're on, you know, spider things and venom things alike and girls on bridges, we know don't bode well. And even so much in the book, Jack Linton goes on to mention, I'm trying to find the...
He basically says, like, if the real one couldn't do it, what makes you think you could?
So he's at the top of the bridge and he grabs Flash's sister and says, I remember this story about how old Webhead couldn't save some pretty girl from a terrible fall. If the real deal couldn't save some skirt, how could you? And chucks her off the side of the bridge. Flash ends up saving her, of course. But mind you, as he saves her, he left Betty up in where he thought was safe on the top of some other building. Right after he's done saving his sister, you see that the new toxin, who is currently Eddie Brock, has now captured Betty Brant. And in the very last panel, you see that Flash's mother has been wrapped into a cocoon by the Fly. So pretty much anybody that this man cares about is currently kidnapped and or maybe dead, and he's not looking like he's going to be doing too well himself. All in all, another great, great work from Remender, and it's just co-written by Bunn, who is supposed to be Cullen Bunn, who's eventually going to become the main writer on it. I'm always curious to know when there's co-writing, how much of each the writer contributed, if it was like half and half, or, you know, Cullen Bunn did most of the story and Remender kind of directed it, or vice versa, you know, things like that. But for whatever hand he had in this, it was really solid, and it's making me hopeful for when he becomes on as full-time writer. And I kind of like when they do it this way, where it's not just a jarring, you know, okay, you've got one writer for this very last arc, and then starting this arc, it's somebody brand new, you know. You get the exiting writer to work with the incoming writer and kind of co-plot things together that the next person can string off of. It kind of works a little better now. I'm hoping that it works out good for this book, because even without Remender writing it, I'm going to stick around. The art was solid. Medina's art has been doing most of it. It's been great. I'm thoroughly enjoying this book still. I will continue to pick it up. It's a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, it's not a good time to be Flash Thompson.
Not at all.
I mean, this is, I think I'm the most person who's read most of Rick Remender's stuff, and he loves to torture his characters to more than most writers, the furthest that they can go to them. It's awful. Yeah, that image of seeing that guy had his head chopped off in the jack-o'-lantern, what the fuck?
Awesome.
Yeah, it was a great book. I'm leaving though when Remender's gone. All right, so after an extended show and some minor fuck-ups, thank you for listening. Twitter.com/Warriors3PCast. Email us at thewarriors3@gmail.com. Facebook us. I know Arnold has to take care of that. At least I think he does. Maybe he's just been lying to me this entire time. Who knows? Taser, that's Brian. And, of course, my man Arnold. We'll see you next week for episode number one.
Arnold's your man, huh?
108, you homo-phobing son of a bitch.
Bye-bye. A-Train's going to...
to me. Oh, I despise, 'cause it means destruction of innocent lives. War means tears, 10,000 of others die when they're